Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, welcome to Inside Scoop Live, and thanks for tuning in. I'm your host, Juanita Watson, and today I have brought to the program Donald Bode. He is the author of the novel FNG, which is now in its second pressing. It was originally released in 1985. It has been revised and reissued and is out now by Modern History Press. Donald Bode was born in Fort Wayne, Indiana, in an army barracks where his father was assigned during World War II. He went to college to avoid the draft, but after graduation in 1968, he ended up drafted anyway. He served as a mortarman in Vietnam and returned home weighing 45 pounds less than when he was drafted. Don was soon married and got a job in a Florida restaurant. It was while washing dishes at work that he got the idea for FNG. He went on to earn an MFA in the writing program at University of Oregon, and for the next few years, he built houses in Oregon, taught university classes, and bought a bar in Chicago. He now works as a carpenter in his native Indiana, where he lives, near his wife and son. So I am just so happy to have Don on the phone today. Welcome to Inside Scoop Live, Don.
Thank you, Juanita. Good to talk to you.
Yes, yes. So FNG, you are really getting some great reviews from really some of the biggies in the industry. I know I've read little blurbs from the New York Times, the Chicago Sun-Times, the Library Journal is saying that this book is a powerful social document. Boston Herald says it's one of the most hard-hitting of all Vietnam novels, and I'm interested to know why you think this novel is capturing readers and some of these luminaries so strongly.
I think it's topical, as a matter of fact. You know, I think the fact that Iraq has begun and been going for years, that it reignites an interest in what we call war.
Mm-hmm.
War is the oldest literary subject there is, and it's rather universal, I guess.
Mm-hmm. But I'm sure that you're so modest. There's got to be something. I mean, your writing is incredibly captivating and very, very detail-oriented. I mean, it puts the reader right there with your main character in this book. So, I mean, don't you think that has something to do with it?
I hope so.
Yeah.
I mean, I worked hard on that aspect of it, and I think it's an important part of a narration. So
mm-hmm.
I would have to say I believe it is, yes.
Yeah. So is this your only book?
Yes, the only novel I've written.
Huh, interesting. Have you written anything else? I mean, writing is part of your history.
Yeah, I've written some short stories and even some poetry way back when, and done a little bit of journalism, but basically this project took most of my energy for years and years and years.
Yeah, I imagine it would. So it was originally released in 1985. How long did it take for you to come up with that first edition?
15 years.
Wow.
I started in 1970. I think I heard you say I was working in Florida, and that was 1970, and it was published in 1985.
Oh, okay. So tell us how the idea for this book came about, and why did you decide to write about the Vietnam War at that time? I mean, this was pre-Iraq in 1970 to 85.
I came back from Vietnam in 1970.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, the magnitude of the experiences, it comes into play. Why I didn't, you know, really start with the germ of the idea that I had, I just began to write. And once I found my characters, the story kind of came. It's based on some things that happened to me.
Mm-hmm. So tell us about your main character, Gabriel.
Gabriel is a house painter when he first goes to Vietnam. And that kind of parallels what I did before I went in. And he's a kid. He's young. We were all young over there. You know, the average age, I think, was 19 and a half years old or something like that for draftees.
Mm.
And once a kid like that, or anybody actually, but somebody so impressionable gets involved in the whole experience, then it just kind of takes off from there, I guess I can say.
Mm-hmm.
And the other characters come in as they would, as they did for me when I was there. They come in and they leave, and they come in and they leave. They come in and they leave. That's the way that war went. You know, it was a year's tour of duty.
And you were there for 1 year?
I was actually there for almost 14 months. I was there for 405 days, to be exact.
God, I'm sure you were counting every one of them when you were there. You know, when I was kind of reading up on you and this book, I was wondering why, because I know that there are parallels with your story and your main characters, and I was wondering why you decided to take this story on as a novel instead of just writing your, you know, autobiography.
I think the pull of narration is awfully strong, and I would rather tell a story than to recite facts. And besides, my tour was uneventful in the sense that I wasn't a hero or anything like that, and I was a common soldier. And I think that the reason the narration fits the subject so well is because it's kind of lodged in all of us.
So as a common soldier, like you say, though, I mean, you still experienced some extremely traumatic things when you were over there, and just being a part of that whole experience, I mean, it must have completely changed who you were.
Indeed, Juanita, it did. I went over a kid, and I didn't come back as a kid. I had something I wanted to say, and you know, I went through the gamut of emotions, the camaraderie with other guys, and the stark naked fear, and the questioning of myself, and kind of the world in a microcosm.
Now, I understand, Don, that you were drafted, and I kind of mentioned it earlier, that you were thinking of kind of not going. You know, there were some options for you not to go, but then you eventually did go. Can you tell us a little bit about how that came about and how you eventually made your decision to actually go and not try to escape the draft?
I sure can. It probably won't be what you expect, but I did go AWOL between my ITR, my infantry training, and my shipment overseas. I was very much against the war, still am, and so I didn't go right away. And then I was in two automobile accidents, one on a motorcycle, and by that time I had no choice. I had to return to the Army because I couldn't do anything about it. I was hurt, and I had to surrender.
So they wanted you while you were hurt?
They actually put me in a brig. And then while I recovered, after I recovered, then I was shipped overseas. But I missed my troop movement, so that everybody I went through training with was already over there. So I was 60 days late.
So when you went over there, basically you didn't know anybody?
Not a soul.
Wow, that is so interesting. So tell us then, because this kind of ties into the title of your book, FNG, so tell us what that stands for and explain that to listeners.
Okay, well, I hope this isn't one of George Carlin's words, but F stands for fucking, and NG is new guy. That was a kind of initiation for anybody who got there. Everybody was an FNG. And it's just something that anybody who had been there called everybody else as a kind of a badge, a way of explaining that they were shorter, which means they had less time to go than anybody who just got there. So the new guy was kind of the bane of jokes, I guess.
Mm-hmm. I hear it could have been pretty rough for some of the new guys going over.
Sure. I don't mean to indicate that the the guys who had been there treated the new guys badly by any means, but there was a kind of standoffishness and a pecking order. And, of course, the FNG is on the bottom of that pecking order, and it takes a little while to get rid of it, to shed that label.
That must just be overwhelming for new recruits going over and having to deal with just the fact that here they are right in the middle. The reality of war is right in their face, and then having to deal with, you know, those kinds of dynamics. I mean, it just must have been overwhelming.
It sure is. I think everybody handles it in their own way. I was a little older than the average recruit, so that I guess I had a little experience behind me, and I dealt with it that way. Other guys with a different kind of personality fit right in immediately. Some guys even relished some of them. Not everybody was a draftee, of course.
Mm-hmm.
And some of them actually relished the sense that they were a soldier.
Well, that's interesting that you point that out, because I've often wondered if the attitude of someone in the military, you know, being, say, a draftee or going there just, you know, completely willingly, if you can tell a difference in a soldier, if that's like a palpable difference.
It is. Yes, it is. But I should say that, say, 6 months into a tour, that those differences are less distinct. Once you become part of a unit and depend on other people and vice versa, then those, we call RA is the term for a real army, a regular army. They're the ones who enlisted. And the differences between USs and RAs, that is draftees and volunteers, kind of disappears after a while, because it gets to be a group. There's always, you know, some guys maintain their attitude throughout, but not very many, I may say so.
So tell us a little about Gabriel's journey in this book. You know, he's there in Vietnam. So what is the story that you're telling in this novel?
You know, in a sense, there's almost an absence of story, because what I try to do is pick Gabriel up at the beginning of his tour and drop him off at the end, and the story itself is contained within those two parameters. And obviously there's no pre-planning to a guy's tour, to a person's tour of duty or anything, and what happens, happens. And one episode may lead to another one, and it may not.
Now, did you bring in the whole concept of post-traumatic stress, which is just synonymous now with the Vietnam War?
Yeah, at the time I didn't know what it was. We had various degrees of PTSD that showed up over there. But, of course, it usually shows up when somebody returns.
Mm-hmm.
And there were various degrees of guys who didn't quite handle the trauma, and those who handled it well. You know, it depended so much on, well, luck and personality and, I guess, your prior psychological makeup.
Mm-hmm. Your coping skills.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. How were you affected by your service? Did you end up with any post-traumatic stress issues?
Yes.
You did. Can you tell us a little bit about them?
Sure. As I said, I didn't know what it was or what they called it at the time, but after some combat, then I think my whole attitude towards it changed, actually. It was a matter of survival. And then it's like being on some sort of, what I want to say, some natural flight or fight. And you carry that, you manage it. I managed it and buried it at the same time, and got myself through. And then when I got home, I was virtually lost and isolated. I was back in the States about 32 hours after I left the field.
Gosh.
Yeah. So that when I got to San Francisco, I went from Seattle to San Francisco, and they were dynamiting the streets in San Francisco, and every concussion that I could feel or every noise I could hear, I couldn't get out from under the bed.
Mm.
It took me a long time to deal with that, and I'm not sure I have overcome it completely yet.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But we're going to see more and more of it, of course, with these returning Iraqi veterans.
Yeah, I'm wondering. I mean, this is very timely that you would come out with the reissue of your novel. And I know you really wanted to kind of bring it into a present-day context with the war that's going on. And you're doing this really with your character Seth in the book.
Yeah, I guess I have to feel like I didn't speak up loud enough or soon enough when, you know, after all these years, and I got this opportunity to see if I could bridge the gap between Iraqi veterans and Vietnam veterans. And so I chose to use a Vietnam veteran anticipating the deployment of his grandson, so that in a sense, you know, war never changes. And Seth, the new character in the book, is facing the same things that I faced, same thing that Gabriel faced when he went, and so many of the people who are going now.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So when this current war with Iraq first started, did this just basically bring up all of your Vietnam experiences right to the surface again?
It completely depressed me.
Yeah.
When I knew that the invasion was imminent, I felt powerless and angry and depressed. And I talked probably for the first time about certain things. I don't know whether that was a result of the imminent invasion or whether it was just time for me to do that or what, but I kind of became more honest with myself and other people.
Like, what kind of things did you bring up?
Some of my combat experiences, I guess, was the kernel of it. But I have a 21-year-old son, and, you know, I couldn't accept the fact that he might have to go.
Yeah.
I blame myself if he had had to, because I wish I had been loud 20 years ago.
Oh, I see.
Not that I'm sure anybody would have listened, but I think I might have felt better about myself.
Well, it's interesting that, you know, those kinds of things need to come to the surface. And so this was a catalyst for you to get that up and get that out.
That's right.
So how did your son, what was his perception of this war? And how did that shift after hearing your combat stories that you were telling, you know, for virtually the first time?
Well, you know, I don't ever remember telling him any combat stories. I don't know. Perhaps I did. I don't really remember. But he was pretty aware of the horror of war. He had read my book,
mm-hmm.
and
okay.
he you know, he's got a good head on his shoulders,
mm-hmm.
as so many kids do.
Mm-hmm.
So he wasn't gonna go if he could help it,
mm-hmm.
and he didn't.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he hadn't.
Yeah. No draft yet. What?
And we'll be back with more Inside Scoop Live after these important announcements.
Established in 1998, Rebecca's Reads is a book review and publicity service serving a large reading audience as well as a wide community of authors, publishers, publicists, and buyers and sellers. They offer reviews of recently published books, as well as chapter readings, teasers, and videos to help you decide what book you would like to read next. Their insightful author interviews take connecting reader and author one step further, and if you decide you would like to purchase a book, an easy-to-navigate link will allow you to purchase the book immediately online. For the authors, publicists, and publishers, Rebecca's Reads has a variety of publicity services to help them market their books to their reading audience. Their services are budget-friendly and effective. For buyers and sellers, they have a monthly list of current reviews in the Book Review Index for easy browsing, as they know your time is precious and efficiency is a priority. Be sure to visit RebeccasReads.com and browse around their new space. Whatever your literary need, this user-friendly website may be just what you're looking for. Welcome back to Inside Scoop Live. Just to remind you, I'm talking today with Dawn Bodie, author of FNG, out now on Modern History Press. You can find out more about Dawn through his website, dawnbodie.com. What are your fears of possibly a draft coming in the future here?
Well, for one thing, I think the concept of volunteer army is a frightening thing, because the military has a certain mindset, and people who volunteer for the military are more likely to accept what needs to be accepted in order to go to war. So I think that a volunteer army is wrong to start with. And I believe there should be some kind of inclination for people to do something for their country, but I think they ought to have every chance to do something besides go into the military.
Mm.
If the draft begins again, I wouldn't be surprised if there's at least an unspoken revolution.
Yeah, I think you're right. I mean, there are so many people now that are speaking out that are just confused over this war and really questioning it at this point. I mean, that could be so, that we could see something, and, you know, that wouldn't even compare to really what we saw in the 60s.
No, I think the 60s are the 60s, and they'll never be matched, duplicated in any way. But, people have to remember that the protesters of the 60s really had a lot to do with ending that Vietnam War.
Mm-hmm.
And in that sense, maybe that's what we need to do now. Although I think it's a kind of a different arena.
Yeah, it is a completely different time. The atmosphere is very different than it was then. And I wonder if protesting really would have the weight that it did back then, today.
I do too. I wonder that myself, Juanita.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah, yeah. But something has to happen.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So do you
look forward to get over with?
Yeah, no kidding. I mean, and they talk about that this, you know, there's no end in sight, and it's just very scary. I wonder if you think that the transformation, like you talk about how the personality transformation of new recruits back in Vietnam, when they're really exposed to the harsh realities of war, it turns them, you know, eventually into, you know, hardened veterans or just a hardened personality. And I wonder if you feel that the individuals coming back from Iraq today, if you think that transformation will be as severe. We're hearing some statistics about post-traumatic stress and that sort of thing, but I think that a lot of it isn't really being spoken about. So I'd like to hear your opinion.
Well, I hadn't thought about that. I think that for one thing, the average age of our troops over there now is quite a bit older than the average age of Vietnam.
Mm.
And that a lot of those people have families, you know, as opposed to being drafted right out of high school, that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And that maybe they have better coping skills. But if they're really in the midst of combat, I don't think you can fight that off. I think that's going to affect anybody who's ever been in for the rest of their life. You know, there were a lot of people, a lot of guys in Vietnam who never saw combat,
mm-hmm.
who didn't come back as bitter and as frightened and alienated as some of those of us who did.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think that has so much to do with personality as it does with luck.
Mm-hmm.
I think some of the returning Iraqi veterans are going to be affected like a lot of us were, all right. What the society does for those veterans is going to be very important, because you must understand that a Vietnam veteran was not accepted. You know, we were never thanked. We were never made into heroes of any kind. We were degraded.
Yeah, actually. That really, I'm sure, reinforced the trauma even deeper in those coming back.
Yeah, I think that we've learned one thing at least, and that is to pay more honor to and salute those returning veterans, you know. Plus, I think the biggest difference, Juanita, is that they're going over in troop movements and coming back in troop movements.
Uh-huh.
I went alone, came home alone, and so did about everybody else I know, you know. We didn't come back with anybody else. We came back when our tour was up, and these people at least have the advantage of coming back with people they are over there with.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's something the government actually learned.
So that has changed then since Vietnam?
Tremendously, yeah.
Oh, isn't that interesting?
Yeah, we all came home alone.
Oh.
And they all are coming back with their units, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, they're extending them there, too, and that's not, but
yeah.
Still, they're going to be together for however long they're over there, plus coming home together. It gets a chance to wind down, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And they have somebody immediately who they can talk to. You know, when we came back, there was nobody around to talk to.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I've heard you, Don, use the quote either in another interview that I heard or read. I'm not sure where, but you use a quote that refers to war as the pattern called war. And I'd like you to maybe explain that. I've never heard that. I find that quote really fascinating. So can you explain that a little further, what that means?
Yeah, it comes from a poem by Amy Lowell. And it is the last stanza of that poem. And I can't remember all of it, but I do remember some of the last stanza, which was, "My love died fighting with the Duke of Flatter. Was a Duke of Flanders in a pattern called war. Christ, what are patterns for?" That's, I guess, pretty close to what she said.
Mm-hmm.
But it is a pattern called war, which struck me, and then Christ, what are patterns for? You know, that's part of the poem.
Mm-hmm.
And I think what it means is, even then, you know, that was the early 19th century, people were realizing that war is a pattern. It's such a perfect word. I wouldn't even try to make up a better word, or, you know, I can't think of anything to compare it to.
Hmm. Interesting. Hmm. So what do you think then that there are any advantages of going to war? I just wonder what your stance is at this point, having gone through the experience when you did, seeing this war going on right now. If you are, you know, anti-war, if you still believe that we do need to go to war, I mean, what are your opinions at this point?
I see absolutely no reason to go to war, and I am anti-war, and I think that's because of the pattern of it. This one's taking on the same look of everyone I know of, and that is where the few send the many to do the job, and I don't think this job's worth doing, and I'm not sure I can think of anything that might be. You know, I hear the argument all the time, well, if we don't stop them there, we'll have to fight the terrorists here, and they're already here. You know, it's not as though we're stopping them from coming. They're already here.
Mm.
So I think if we're going to fight, we should just fight here.
Mm. Mm-hmm.
You know that? I have to be careful. I get off on a...
You're being very, very safe today. That's okay. So why then do you think it's important for books like this that you're coming out with, FNG, that tell of these experiences in Vietnam, which, you know, was over 40 years ago? Why is it important that books like this still be written and still be put on the shelves?
For the same reason that books like Farewell to Arms and The Red Badge of Courage and Armies of the Night, those books that speak to the thinking person, I think that if there are 1,000 people who read my book, then maybe a couple will be affected by it to the point where they reexamine some of what they thought. You know, I try to make it as real as it was in my book. And frankly, I hope to scare some kids.
So who, talking to people that have read your book, who is your audience?
It is pretty diversified. A lot of veterans do, and a lot of veterans' wives or military families, a lot of women who have been affected by it. And I've read it in, you know, I've had it done as a book report in high schools, and I guess just kind of the reading public who is interested in something like that to start with. Historically, I think that the people who have a sense of history or who are curious about history, they also read it for those very reasons.
Mm-hmm. Because this is a first-person account. I mean, it is very, like I said earlier, really takes the reader into what it felt like for your main character.
Thank you. I consider that flattering.
Yeah, absolutely. So after you read the revised edition and you made some changes and some time has gone by, is there anything that didn't get into this book that you now in retrospect would have liked to add it, or did you basically get everything out?
I'm sorry, would you ask that again?
Yeah, sure. So you have, this is the revised edition of your book, this new one that has just come out now on Modern History Press. And I know that you did make some changes with it. And I'm just wondering, as, you know, time goes by and maybe, you know, your thoughts, I don't know, are going back to that time and you're looking at what's happening now in Iraq, just is there anything else that's coming up? I mean, I imagine this has got to be quite a cathartic experience, so there'd always be new things coming up. Is there anything that has come up for you since the pressing of this revised edition that maybe should have or could have made it into this book?
Well, I can't say that. I can't say that I can think of anything right offhand, but it has made me want to write more, write again.
Oh.
And I can't think of anything that I feel like I left out.
Mm-hmm.
But it has reminded me of the pleasure of writing.
Mm. Well, what a gift. So where do you think you would like to go with your writing at this point?
I think I will probably start with a first-person account, I guess I'd call it, of my life since then, you know, just, I want to say John Updike-ish, you know, just something that I've always found writing to be very, very organic.
Mm.
And it grows on itself, and I just have to be led there.
Mm-hmm. Put the pen to paper and see where it goes.
Right.
Yeah.
I'm not one to write about someone else, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I pretty much have to deal with my own self, and that would be my experience.
Yes. Well, there's definitely a need for that, and I encourage you, and I hope the next time we get to talk that it's going to be because that book is coming out and hitting shelves as well.
I hope so, too.
Yeah. Well, Don, let's mention your website. It's donbodey.com, B-O-D-E-Y, and your book, I believe, can be purchased through the website as well as through like Amazon and ordered through local booksellers. Is that right?
That's correct, yes.
Okay, good. So has all of your family read your book at this point?
Well, I have one brother who hasn't.
Mm-hmm.
But my 94-year-old mother is reading it for the second time.
Mm-hmm.
And of course my wife and child have all, everybody's read it, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah, it's interesting. Reading it and then this revised edition, I mean, they must somehow, I imagine, either see you or understand you in a different way. Do you think
Absolutely.
That's... Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah, tell us a little bit about that.
Over the years, I guess, some of the protective covering I put over myself is away, and I think that I show more. Like, I think that talking to my family, my wife, I'm able to own up or, you know, be who I am a little bit. I think prior to all this, I was couched.
Closed down.
Yeah. So in that way, it's let me spread a little bit.
So you're kind of coming around full circle at this point.
I think that's a good way to think about it.
How interesting. What an amazing story and a great book, Don. It's been wonderful talking with you today. I really thank you for coming on to the program.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Yes, and best of luck to you with FNG and your future endeavors. Please come back and tell us what you've been up to.
Thank you very much. I shall.
Okay, Don. Take care.
Goodbye.
All right, listeners, I've been talking with Don Bodey. His novel FNG is out now in its second revised edition on Modern History Press. It is available through his website, donbodey.com. As well, you can purchase it through local and online booksellers. So very, very interesting. You should really check out this book. It's getting some really amazing reviews, like I mentioned earlier. And there's a need for this story and stories like this to surface and be read today. So we certainly encourage you to do that. So once again, thank you so much for listening to Inside Scoop Live. I'm Juanita Watson, and until next time.